Green Bay Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central. I'm your host, Brian Caravu, joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're getting ready for the NFL draft. Now, just about 2 weeks away, 2 weeks in a day. Anyway, we have Scott Wright of NFL Draft Countdown joining us this morning to talk some NFL draft. Scott, how you doing this year? We've had you on every year for a few years now.
Yeah, I'm doing excellent. Good to be back as always.
Very good. Glad to have you. Now, let's start. I was just checking out your website, NFLDraftCountdown.com, checking out your latest mock draft. You have UCF quarterback Blake Bortles going number one overall. Is he the number one choice, or is this still up in the air? Who else is in play for the number one overall slot?
Yeah, I'm not overly confident yet. Like you mentioned, draft's only a couple of weeks out, but there's still quite a bit of uncertainty right at the top of the draft even. And the Texans, I'm not sure they themselves know exactly what they're going to do yet. I think they're looking at two of the quarterbacks, Blake Bortles from Central Florida and Johnny Manziel from Texas A&M. And then I think they're looking at Jadeveon Clowney from South Carolina. And then I think if they could get a trade offer, they would trade down. And there's a lot of smoke out there linking the Texans to a lot of different players. And that's not a coincidence. They're playing the game, and they're trying to entice somebody to trade up. And that's probably a smart thing for them to do. But I think in the end, if they can't trade down, I think Clowney could end up being kind of the compromised choice, if you will, if they aren't sold on one of these quarterbacks, especially if they don't want to risk taking Bortles over maybe a hometown hero like Manziel, who would a move that might incite fan base to a certain degree. They could go with Clowney and justify it, say, hey, we took the most talented player in the draft at number one, and then try to come back at 33 and get a quarterback. But you have to be careful, because the Texans aren't the only one that are maybe thinking along those lines. I think we could very easily see the Jaguars, the Browns, the Raiders, the Vikings, maybe even the Buccaneers, all these teams that need quarterbacks, they're all thinking about passing in the top 10 because there are so many other excellent blue chip options available at other positions this year, and then coming back early in round two. But if I need a quarterback, I don't know how cute I want to get, because, like I say, with 6-7 teams all thinking the same thing, there's no guarantee that you're going to get one specific guy that you're targeting 30, 35 picks later. You better make sure there's two or three quarterbacks that you feel could be the guy. Otherwise, I think you just need to pull the trigger in the top 10, to be honest. And if I were running a team, if you truly love one of these quarterbacks and feel he can be a franchise guy, just pull the trigger in the top 10. But I think we're going to see these quarterbacks slide further than expected, just because, like I say, teams are just not completely sold on them. And there are other alternatives. It's not like they're backed into a corner where it's quarterback or nothing. Yeah, they're great, but so is Clowney. So is Khalil Mack from Buffalo. So is Sammy Watkins from Clemson. So are Greg Robinson from Auburn and Jake Matthews from Texas A&M, the two offensive tackles. There's so many great options at the top of this draft. I think teams are just more reluctant than ever to expend a top 10 pick on a quarterback, knowing that doing so, you better really love them, because you're putting your job on the line probably.
Well, let me ask you this. This, of course, being a Packers talk show, they're sitting at number 21. Is it possible these teams pass on a quarterback in the first round and then maybe want to trade up with a team like the Packers, who sit there late round one? And not just the Packers, but any team that maybe has a late first round draft choice.
Yeah, no question about it. And there's a lot of moving parts. And I could even see some of these teams maybe trading down from the top 5 to 10 and maybe targeting a quarterback later in the first round. Because at a certain point, it's really the Minnesota Vikings at number 8. There's a really big gap of teams that don't need quarterbacks. And it makes sense. They're the better teams. They already have quarterbacks. That's why they're the better teams. There's a reason teams are picking at the top of the draft, and there's a reason teams are picking at the end of the first round. And it usually is a difference at the quarterback position. So there's going to be a lot of moving parts. The problem is, too, if you're saying the Cleveland Browns, who have been linked to Derek Carr, the quarterback from Fresno State, to the point where there's a chance he could go as high as number 4 overall, or even number 5 overall to the Oakland Raiders. Both of those teams have been linked to Carr. But let's say that you're the Cleveland Browns and you go a different direction, quarterback at 4, thinking, well, we're going to come back and get Carr at number 26, that choice they acquired from the Colts in the Trent Richardson deal. Well, Everybody and their grandmother knows the Browns need a quarterback, and they love Derek Carr. So 26, that's the spot you got to get ahead of if you want Derek Carr. And same thing for the Houston Texans. If they don't take a quarterback at one, everybody knows they're taking a quarterback at 33. So all of a sudden, it's hot. Everyone's playing leapfrog, getting over the Houston Texans and taking all these quarterbacks ahead of them. So that's why I say it's pretty risky business, and you have to be really confident that you're going to be able to get your guy later. But I think that's what we're going to see happen. I still think at the end of the day, we're going to see three or four quarterbacks in the first round, but it might only be one or two in the top 10. I could see Teddy Bridgewater from Louisville really sliding on draft day, maybe an Aaron Rodgers, Brady Quinn-esque slide. I think there's scenarios where Johnny Manziel from Texas A&M slides. I think it's going to take a pretty special organization to kind of bring him in and bring your team and build your team around him, both on and off the field. So he's not going to be a fit for everyone. So yeah, before I started my most recent mock draft, I joked that tell me where to put these quarterbacks and I can kind of fill in the blanks around them. And I was only kind of half joking. It's really tough. And here 2 weeks out, and I don't know if anybody has a really good feel where these quarterbacks are going to land. We know the potential landing spots. We know the most likely spots. But at the end of the day, like I say, I just really believe a team like the Jaguars, they're not going quarterback in round one, even though that's their biggest need. I think they're going defense with a pass rusher. And as I said, the Browns, Raiders, Buccaneers, Vikings, I think all of these teams that we think are likely to take a quarterback in the top 10, it's not as sure of a thing that most make it out to be.
Well, it'll be interesting on draft day to see how it all plays out. That's what makes the draft so exciting. At number 21, you have the Packers taking linebacker C.J. Mosley. Sell me on C.J. Mosley. He's not a guy who puts up a ton of sack numbers, a ton of tackle for a loss numbers, but what does he do well, Scott?
Well, and I think C.J. Mosley, if he's there at 21, that would be one of the maybe steals of the first round. I think most teams around the league probably have Mosley in their top 10 to 12 overall of their draft boards. The problem is, and is that players like him do have a tendency to slide, and not always. There are examples of linebackers that aren't top pass rushers going early in the draft, and the Packers have an example of it with A.J. Hawk. You look at Patrick Willis, Luke Kuechly, et cetera. So there is precedent, and I would not be shocked if C.J. Mosley came off the board maybe as early as the top 10 overall. The Minnesota Vikings at number 8 have been linked to him. So there's a lot of potential landing spots for Mosley to come off the board earlier, but if he's there at 21, I think that would be a great pick for the Packers. Like I said, it would be a steal. And he's not the biggest guy around, but his size is adequate, and he played the middle of the 3-4 defense in college, and a terrific all-around player. He can play the run. He's really athletic. He can drop into coverage. He can blitz off the edge. It's not like he's completely worthless in that regard, but he's just not to the level of maybe Khalil Mack or an Anthony Barr from UCLA, et cetera. So mostly I think he's got a pretty wide range, and there's some durability concerns there too. He dinged up a little bit in college, so that's maybe a little bit of a concern. There's definitely reasons to think he could slide a little bit in round one, but I think the Packers at 21 are probably his floor, and I have a feeling a guy like Ted Thompson would recognize what a terrific football player Mosley is and turn in that card post-haste.
Well, let's talk about a guy who could also play that position, Ohio State linebacker Ryan Shazier. Now, here's a guy who is more of the playmaker, the guy who makes a bunch of tackles for losses, things like that. He was kind of light in college, I think 227 pounds, something like that. And I think, you know, some people think, well, you can't be that light and play inside linebacker in the NFL. What are your thoughts on Ryan Shazier?
Yeah, and he did bulk up. He was 237 pounds at the scouting combine, so he's shown the ability to add some weight. And he doesn't have a really big frame. He's only 6'1" and 8", so he's probably getting pretty close to maxed out at 240, but that's more than adequate. And that's another guy. Players like that have a tendency to slide a little further than they should on draft day. And I think of someone like Levante David when he was coming out of Nebraska a couple years ago. I had him rated as a first-round pick. He fell into the early to middle portion of round two, and he's already one of the best defensive players in the league. And it's one of those cases where I think both with David and the same with Shazier is you don't get too lost in the measurables with those guys. I think you have to trust your eyes. And you put on the film, and Ryan Shazier plays like a first-round pick, just super active, sideline-to-sideline range, just seems to have a knack for being in the right place at the right time to make the big play. I'm a big fan of Ryan Shazier. I have him as a first round pick. Would I be shocked if he slid out of the first round slightly? No. There's very little difference between being, say, the 25th pick and the 45th pick in any given NFL draft, especially one as deep as this. So it really is a fine line. But I think when push comes to shove, I think Shazier is going to be a first-round pick because the film is just so darn impressive. But you never know. He's probably going to be more of a 4-3 outside linebacker. Maybe he could play the middle in a 3-4. And I think he could be in the picture for the Packers at 21, but I think he's down the list a little ways. That might be a plan D type of situation. I think if the Packers end up taking Shazier at 21, it means some other stuff probably went wrong from their perspective ahead of them. I definitely think a guy like Mosley would probably take precedence and maybe some guys at even other positions.
We're talking to Scott Wright of NFL Draft Countdown here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. The NFL released their list of players who will be attending the NFL Draft yesterday. Among them, Indiana wide receiver Cody Latimer kind of caught me by surprise. You haven't really heard this name as really a guy who's maybe a first down draft choice. Is this a guy whose stock is rising, Scott? Cody Latimer.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that the NFL invited him to attend the draft really kind of speaks volumes, because they're not going to intentionally invite a guy that they don't think is going to come off the board pretty early. They don't want the egg on their face of having someone sit in that green room too terribly long and have it become a soap opera during the telecast. So the fact that Latimer was invited, I think, is a pretty strong indication that he's going to go maybe even in the late part of the first round, but certainly I think somewhere in the second round. And he's a guy who didn't get a lot of attention in college, playing for Indiana. It's not like the Hoosiers have been a power during his college career, and not a whole lot of exposure, but then a real productive player for them the last 2 years running, a really good basketball player in high school. He's a great athlete, almost built like a running back. He's about 6'1", 215 pounds. His pro day, he ran 4.39, 4.42, somewhere in that range, so really good straight line speed. I'm not sure that he plays up to that speed. And I think maybe even a little overrated. I don't know how much upside I see there with him. I think he's a really good, solid, all-around player. I think he's going to be a terrific complementary type receiver, but I don't know if I want to draft a number two receiver late round one, early round two. I think at that point I want to kind of shoot for the stars. And just in general this year, I don't know if there's any wide receiver that I would use a first-round pick on. It's not that I don't have first-round grades on a bunch of them and like a bunch of them a lot, most notably Sammy Watkins from Clemson, Mike Evans from Texas A&M. But just from a value perspective, we had 19 underclassmen wideouts come out, just unprecedented numbers, and receiver might be the deepest position in this class. And there's going to be guys available in the third round that most years would be receiving first-round consideration. That's how deep of a class it is. So I want to take advantage of that. I'd rather in the first round maybe get a blocker or address another premium position, knowing that I can come back a round, maybe even two rounds later, and get a similar type of talent. And I think a lot of teams in need of wideouts are going to have to ask themselves, okay, we like, say, Kelvin Benjamin from Florida State a lot, but is he that much better than, say, Allen Robinson from Penn State, who I can maybe get 50 picks later? I don't know. So I think that's the type of question teams are going to have to ask themselves when it comes to wideouts. And I could see scenarios where there's maybe three or four receivers that are taken in the first round. I could see five or six. And there's a lot of teams that need them. It's just a matter of how they want to kind of slice up that pie of draft day resources they have. And I have to wonder if we're going to see some of these wideouts fall a little further than most expect.
There was reports that probably a little over a week ago, Pittsburgh quarterback Tom Savage was invited to the NFL draft. As we learned yesterday, he isn't on the list of those who are going to attend, but kind of another guy, I think, who maybe, you know, initially flew under the radar. What are your impressions on Tom Savage, and where could he go in the draft?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. He started out his college career at Rutgers, where he played, and especially as a true freshman, looked really good. Then as a sophomore, he got hurt and lost his job, wound up transferring to Arizona, where he was going to play for Mike Stoops in a pro-style passing system. Then he was fired, and they brought in Rich Rodriguez, who was going to install an option system, which was the exact wrong fit for a statuesque pocket passer like Savage. So before he even wound up playing for Arizona, he sat out 2011. Then he transferred again to Pittsburgh and sat out 2012. So really, he only played two full seasons in college, 2009 and 2013. So he doesn't have a lot of reps or experience, but as I mentioned, he's a big statuesque pocket passer with a strong arm and a little bit of a tough evaluation this year too, because the offensive line was so bad at Pitt that he was under pressure a lot, and that doesn't bode well for a guy like him. It's not like he's running around and avoiding that pressure. He's kind of a sitting duck back there, so a little bit difficult to evaluate just because of that and the lack of experience, but he's a guy that a lot of teams really like, and there really is no consensus when it comes to quarterbacks anymore, I don't think, in the NFL draft, except in those rare occasions, once every 10, 15 years, where you see an Andrew Luck type of prospect. But there's just so many variables that go into it when you're talking about quarterbacks these days. Who's the general manager? What's their philosophy? Who's the head coach? What type of system do they run? Do they want to run a West Coast dink and dunk? Do they want to run a vertical stretch of the field type of system? What traits do they value? Are they more about the physical tools or intangibles, et cetera, right on down the line? So I think we're going to see some crazy stuff when it comes to the quarterbacks. And we already saw it last year. Nobody thought going into the draft that E.J. Manuel would be the first guy off the board in the middle of the first round, but crazy things happen, especially when it comes to quarterbacks. And there's scenarios where Tom Savage, there's talk that maybe he's one of the guys the Houston Texans are targeting at 33 if they don't take a signal caller with the top pick. So Savage, that's another case you mentioned. He was invited to the draft. Pretty good indication he's not going to escape the second round and may go a lot earlier than people expect. I think it's a little artificial. I don't know that he's worthy of being, say, a top 35 overall pick, but at the end of the day, I will never criticize the team for trying at the quarterback position, because until you have that resolved, nothing else really matters, and I'd much rather see an organization take a big swing in a draft for a quarterback like Savage, maybe even a little earlier than they should, rather than say what the Kansas City Chiefs are doing with Alex Smith, who's a 30-plus-year-old journeyman. We know you're not winning a Super Bowl with Alex Smith at this point. At least when you take a chance on a young guy, you have some hope, and you're giving yourself an opportunity. It's going to be fun, though. Once again, you tell me where these quarterbacks go, I can figure out the rest. But there is no uncertainty right now. And I think one of the most intriguing storylines is going to be that jockeying for signal callers, late round one, early round two. If the teams that need them pass early, there's going to be a feeding fest late round one, early round two, which is going to make for some really exciting TV, especially with basically a 24-hour break between round one, the end of round one, and the start of round two. I think if all these teams still need quarterbacks, or a good handful of them, there's going to be a lot of action on Friday night before the start of round two.
Scott, last question before we let you go. We ran a feature here the other day on athletic college tackles who could maybe play center in the NFL. We listed Nevada's Joel Bitonio among them. What are your impressions on him? What position do you think he'll play in the NFL? Because I think, you know, there's a lot of mixed opinions on him. Could be a tackle, could be a guard, could be a center. What do you think?
Well, Joel Bitonio, Nevada, is one of my personal favorites this year. I call him prospect crushes, and I'm just a huge fan of him and the way he plays. And what I like is he plays with a nasty temperament. He really has an edge on the field, and that's something that's the type of demeanor I like to see from my offensive linemen. He played tackle in college. Most assume he's going to kick inside to guard at the next level, but I'm kind of one of those where I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt until he proves me wrong. I think you could start him out at tackle. If it doesn't work out, he can always kick inside. You always have that plan B. But he came in at 6'4¼", so adequate size, almost 34-inch arms. So I don't see any reason why you can't at least give him a shot at offensive tackle. But he could very well end up inside a guard where he's going to excel as well. And I think he could be a surprise late first rounder. I don't think a lot of people are talking about him in that range, but we've seen offensive linemen get pushed up in recent years. Going back to Dwayne Allen, James Carpenter, nobody thought was going to be a first rounder, even just last year with Justin Pugh and Kyle Long. So I think Bitonio is a strong candidate to be that guy this year. And maybe to a team like the Patriots late in the first round could be a potential landing spot. The Seahawks at 32 could use an offensive lineman, maybe even the Denver Broncos. So I really like Joel Bitonio. And as you mentioned, not only can he play tackle or guard, but maybe could even kick into center as well. So you love the versatility, and you feel confident that even if in a worst-case scenario, at the very least, you have a versatile swing backup who can play all along the line, which is still a pretty valuable commodity. So I really like Joel Bitonio. I have him in my top 32 overall in my rankings. But if he's not a late first-round pick, he's going to go off the board very early in the second. And you can make an argument that he's the fifth best offensive lineman in this class, and the four guys ahead of him could all be gone in the top 15 overall.
Very interesting. Scott, we appreciate you joining us on the show today. Appreciate you taking some time to talk to us, talk about the NFL draft. I know you're busy with the draft just being 2 weeks away, so we'll let you get back to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, and I can't wait for draft day. I'm sure everyone else is just as excited as I am.
All right. Take care, Scott.
All right, take care.
Scott Wright, NFL Draft Countdown. Checking in here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Great to have him joining us. Great to have you, the listener, joining us as NFL Draft Talk is dominating most of our time on today's show. Today being Wednesday, the NFL schedule is released tonight. Are you pumped? We already know who the Packers are going to play. That was determined the moment the 2013 season ended. But we're going to get the dates and times later today, 7 p.m. Central Time. The NFL schedule is released, so we'll have that up here at Cheesehead TV with some analysis as soon as we can following the release later tonight. Yesterday, the Packers began their offseason program, and so for the first time since last season ended, the entire team came together under one roof, got together, started their strength and conditioning workouts, things like that, started to have meetings, et cetera. Like we said before, it's kind of piecemeal at first. They don't do a lot the first few weeks as they just get back in the swing of things, but they're finally coming together under one roof. The quest for a Super Bowl in 2014 is beginning as of this week. Julius Peppers was in town for the first time. They shared some photos over at the Packers official website, just showing that Julius Peppers, the Packers' new big-time addition free agent signing, is indeed there and getting ready with the rest of his teammates for this journey they're about to go on. The 2014 season. The Packers officially announced the signing of quarterback Matt Flynn yesterday. It was reported more than a week ago that they'd agreed to terms. Apparently, it was just a situation of convenience where Flynn decided to ink the dotted line, if you will, on Tuesday, as the Packers began their offseason workout program, just waited to sign the contract until he came to town. They already agreed to terms, so nothing changing there, apparently. Hopefully, we'll get the details of said contract maybe later today or tomorrow, now that everything's official, so that should be coming down the pike soon. It's been reported that it's a one-year deal, but we'll find out for how much it took the Packers to pry Matt Flynn away from a team like the New York Giants, who apparently had some interest in him. And also, we learned out, as a report from Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel points out, even though linebacker Jamari Lattimore has not signed a contract, he has been offered a tender from the Green Bay Packers that he hasn't signed yet, although he can. He has signed a participation agreement to take part in the team's offseason workout program. As a restricted free agent, Jamari Lattimore has the right to test free agency until May 2nd, which I believe is a Friday, something like that. So he has every right to go out and try. And you know, I don't think Jamari Latimer is going to get a contract offer from another NFL team for the simple fact that the Packers can match it. I don't think any team, while there might be other teams that could have interest in him, you know, he's not such a great player where he's going to command a contract that the Packers simply can't afford or something like that. I think it was great for Jamari Lattimore to figure out a way, sign this participation agreement to take part in the team's offseason program, even though he technically hasn't signed. Apparently with this participation agreement, it protects him in case he gets injured working out, something like that. There's probably insurance involved where he'll still get paid or something along those lines. I don't know all the details of this, you know, agreement he signed or how the NFL protects these kind of players. But it's pretty rare occurrence if a player gets, you know, injured working out. Not to say it can happen. Obviously, we saw last year a guy like Casey Hayward pulling his hamstring, on his own working out in the off season, albeit he was under contract at the time, so a little bit of a difference there. But still, glad to see Jamari Lattimore taking the initiative, coming to Green Bay with the rest of his teammates. They're all there. They're all under one roof. They're all, you know, working out together, building camaraderie, things like that. Good to see. As far as I know, there is nobody who's under contract who's not there. At least if they are, it hasn't come out yet. As we know, off-season workout program, technically voluntary. NFL rules prohibit it being mandatory with the exception of mini camp that ends up happening in June. So players can, if they want, stay away. But the Packers being, as we saw last week, incentivizing the workout program. They pay more bonus money than any team in the NFL. And really, I've seen a few people criticize the Packers, on social media, things like that, for offering these big time bonuses, workout bonuses, saying, well, this is what you're paid to do. You're supposed to be there. Well, the way NFL contracts are structured, the point is not that, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews and big time players, you know, they shouldn't be getting money to be paid what they're going to do. You know, all NFL contracts, or at least guys who are, you know, big time players who command more than the NFL's minimum, they include signing bonuses. And I remember Andrew Brandt, the former Packers vice president, talking about this. When you have a signing bonus, you know what a signing bonus is? They give a player all that money up front how they earn a signing bonus is by signing a contract, by putting pen to paper. That is how you earn a signing bonus. At least with workout bonuses, you're getting players to actually earn their money by working out over the course of, you know, like 10 weeks, by attending and taking part and lifting weights and working out with the teammates and practicing and all those things. And doesn't that make sense? Rather than have it go to a signing bonus, you are simply getting paid for putting pen to paper in a signing bonus, for signing your signature. Well, doesn't it make sense to give a player money for working out, for lifting weights, for doing the things you expect a football player to do over the course of days, weeks, even over 2 months? You give these workout bonuses. That makes a whole lot more sense to me than a signing bonus. And I realize you're not going to eliminate signing bonuses entirely. Players are very much incentivized to, they're attracted by a signing bonus because it is easy money, and that's how you get a player to come to town. But I like it how it is very much structured that the Packers pay these guys workout bonuses in the off season. So that makes a whole lot of sense to me. Kudos for the Packers for structuring things the way they do, being among the league leaders, the league leader in workout bonuses. It makes sense to me, and glad they do it because they get a good participation rate. I remember last year that I don't think there was anybody who was under contract who didn't take part in the league's workout program. I remember that, taking place last year, and a player who conducted an interview had said that, great to hear when you hear things like that. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you so much to Scott Wright of NFL Draft Countdown for joining us on the show today. It's great to have him talk some draft. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Caribou. We'll see you later, folks. Stay tuned to CheeseheadTV.com for your news needs all week long, including tonight with the NFL schedule release. We'll have it later today, so make sure to check back then, and we'll have other stuff too. So we'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Simple Gift of Man by Brothers Past on Psi Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.